Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 2:30 p.m. That is Central Time, and today is May 5th. Well, yesterday I have to apologize. I confused myself by reading some statistics, and then I was looking at the pound, and it was up, and it was looking like the market was reacting reasonably well to how the Federal Reserve had raised rates. And I just had assumed that the Bank of England had done the same, and I obviously that wasn't the case. So I do apologize for misleading commentary and obviously sowing uncertainty when there was no need for it, because the Bank of England did come out and raise rates today, not yesterday. And what I found interesting was it was a split decision. You have some people saying they don't want to raise rates at all anymore. You have some saying they need to raise rates more. And then you had a couple of people saying they need to raise rates a lot more. And this points to the conflicted nature of where the Bank of England sits. Because they can see inflation rising, and inflation's rising everywhere. And then what are they going to do about it? Well, they're in a tight position because they've got huge leverage in the mortgage market, and the vast majority of mortgages in the UK are floating rate. So with adjustable rate mortgages, any time you raise interest rates, it goes straight to the bottom line for millions of people, and it acts as a tax on consumption. So they're inhibited from raising interest rates. And that's what the pound is starting to price in. It was down over 2.5 cents in here today. Now, didn't quite, it's not going to close on the low, but this is a massive acceleration of what was already a really quite pronounced trend. Now, I think it is also important to look at what the long-term chart is. So, when we think about what this looks like, we're in a rather interesting scenario here, because the price is coming down to the lower side of the range, and the lows from back in 1985 are around 107. But I think perhaps more important than that is the fact that it ranged above 140 for 30 years. Then we had the Brexit referendum, and since then it's been ranging below 140. So it's been a secular trend downwards for a long time. There was a prolonged period of ranging, and in that time there were bouts of activity which were really very strong for the pound. But since approximately 2007, then the pound has been declining. Now, there's a couple of things that happened in the period around 2007. The first is that the UK went from being an exporter of oil to being an importer, and an exporter of gas to being an importer. So it went from being energy independent to being energy dependent. And then you had the collapse of the financial sector. So that created two big holes in the economy. And the pound collapsed during the credit crisis and really struggled to recover subsequently. Then it declined additionally because of the Brexit referendum and the uncertainty that that engendered. And now we have the war in the Ukraine and additional uncertainty, and it's throwing further light onto the challenges that exist within the economy, because the quick, expensive, or initially expensive way to solve this problem would be to start a deposit insurance type of product, or a way of converting all of the floating rate mortgages into long-term fixed rate mortgages, create a Fannie Mae or a Freddie Mac type organization for the UK, take that leverage off the hands of domestic consumers and put it into a separate vehicle, and then start selling bonds on that basis. That might at least offer some sucker for people who are really encumbered now by rising mortgage rates. And then, of course, you have the pound declining. So there's obviously the potential here that 120 is going to be an area of potential support. But we're going to have to see a profound change in the outlook, either for the strength of the dollar or the weakness of the pound, in order to really confirm that it's more than anything more than just a short-term pause. Now, oil prices were still positive today, and still testing this sequence of lower rally highs. But I thought it was interesting that when we look at it in pounds, well, we had the initial pop on the upside following the devaluation of the currency, and then subsequently it started to sell off. We can then think about this because it's basically a 3 month consolidation above the previous peaks. So we're at historic high prices for oil, and it does continue to consolidate up here. Then it's also, I think, particularly relevant to highlight that despite the fact that oil prices are putting pressure on investors and the stock market has been weak and the currency is going down, gold in pounds is still quite steady and hovering here around the $1,500 area and the region of the peaks from back in 2020. But that fact that the pound has been devaluing since 2016 has been clearly bullish for gold. We have a series of good size ranges, one above another, and it's now consolidating in the region of the previous peak. But this really doesn't look like much more than a consolidation. And there's clearly the scope for real assets to do better in pounds, or at least from the perspective of a pound investor. Now, as we look at what central banks are up to, well, we're continuing to see that there's upward pressure on bond yields. So the 10-year gilt is testing the 2% level. So this is, I think, a meaningful area of potential support for bond prices, but this really is a very consistent trend on the upside for the yield, and it's quite likely that yields will continue higher. Now, of course, there's a clear risk of a recession in the UK with higher inflationary figures, a consumer that's struggling with standards of living. And then also the determination of the Bank of England to choke off liquidity. And the devaluation of the currency is obviously also then creating inflationary pressures all on its own by supporting commodity prices. So, generally speaking, that would be beneficial for bond prices, other than the fact that it's stagflationary. And stagflation's not good for bonds, because you get the high inflation that's not easy to contain, but then you also get lower growth. So the FTSE 250 is pulling back now through the 1,000-day moving average. This would have been an ideal area for it to find support. Now, the bigger question is whether the low put in earlier this year will offer support. Now, it's been an exceptionally choppy environment over the last 2 years. If we just zoom out and look at the trend over the course of the last decade, reversions back towards the 1,000-day moving average have been ideal buying opportunities over the course of the last 12 years. So we're right there right now, but it plowed through that level during 2020. Then it pulled back through it again earlier this year, and now it's falling through it once more. And the 200-day moving average has clearly begun to trend downwards, and the index is encountering resistance in the region of it. So this is continuing to look like a rather bearish environment overall. And I think it's important to highlight that we are starting to see inconsistent trends become progressively less consistent and greater evidence of downtrends are becoming evident. And this is most particularly true of the NASDAQ. Now, the NASDAQ was up in a really impressive manner yesterday and then gave it all up and closed at a new low. So this is, or it's a new closing low at least. So this is a meaningful deterioration. Now, the NASDAQ has been leading on the downside and it's still encountering resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average, but it's quite a way from the 1,000-day moving average. And in fact, we have to go back a rather long way before the NASDAQ has, in fact, engaged in a reversion back to the 1,000-day moving average. It's around 2011. Now, the big question is, this, I think this is in pounds. So we can see that it's been underperforming in pounds from the perspective of a pound investor. But from the perspective of a dollar investor, it's going down faster. So this has been one of the characteristics that has been supportive of assets in the USA, that the relative strength of the dollar has made Wall Street a safe haven from the perspective of international investors. And it's very similar if we think about the NASDAQ from the Euro investors' perspective. So it's still then holding the sequence of higher reaction lows, but still declining. So the relative performance of Wall Street from a currency-adjusted perspective has been quite clearly been beneficial from the perspective of the international investor. And the strength of the dollar is also having a tightening effect in terms of central bank liquidity. So when we think about the total assets of central banks, it's been falling and it's down $2 trillion from its peak, and this is before we actually see balance sheet runoff starting. So we haven't really even started quantitative tightening yet, but the strength of the dollar is sucking liquidity, siphoning money out of the global economy. So this is a really meaningful event, and it's contributing to a significant contraction in risk assets everywhere. And I've often regarded Bitcoin as a barometer for risk appetites. So it rebounded yesterday and then pulled back by over $3,000 in here today to come all the way back to test the 35,000 level. Now, every time it's come back to this area, it has bounced. But until really just the last week or two, we could still say that there was a sequence of higher reaction lows. And that's a lot more difficult argument to make now. So Bitcoin's going to have to rebound and do so emphatically to obviate the potential that we're going to see a breakdown from this level. So we're certainly starting to see some pressure coming to bear on risk assets. Now, when we then think about the broader commodity complex, well, let's think about oil, because I think oil is the best example of where we have this conflicting set of arguments. On the one hand, we have the fact that there are supply restraints. So you have the sanctions on Russia, and you have the reluctance of major suppliers to invest the capital necessary to greatly increase supply. And that's contributing to steady to higher prices. And on the other hand, you have central banks that are withdrawing liquidity and slowing global economic growth, which is cutting into demand. So you have two very different arguments. One is that some people don't want more of it, And others are saying, well, we don't want to make more of it. So that is contributing to a balance at present. And the price is hovering here around the $110 area. And it's pulling back today from the region of the mid-April peak. So it hasn't quite yet broken out of this wedging characteristic. And we may see prices coming back down. Now, gold in dollar terms had jumped higher initially and then finished out the day in very mildly negative territory. So there's also evidence of deleveraging going on here. Now, when we think about the large companies and the fact that these eight companies, Fangman plus Tesla, occupy over 21% of the stock market, but it is coming down and made a new low in here today. And this again is not a consistent trend. We have the acceleration, a reversion to the mean, a sharp bounce and failure, and now it's breaking down. So now we have a lower high and a lower low. This is a downtrend, and it suggests that a reversion back down towards the 1,000-day moving average cannot be ruled out. And we're going to have to see some movement from central banks in terms of their willingness to provide liquidity, or there's going to be significant growth scares. Now, the 10-year yield is up to over 3%, and it was up over 10 basis points in here today. So that's a really impressive breakout. Now, it didn't hold all of the move. I sold my long in the TLT ETF. I'm not willing to sit with losing positions in this kind of environment. I'm more than happy to indulge or the volatility of gold, but I'm not willing to tolerate that same volatility in other assets, and I'm more than offsetting my risk by increasing my short position in here again today. I took a partial profit yesterday because I was willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the big upward dynamic that we had and put it back on today when I saw that we weren't going to have any follow-through on the upside. So I think this is reiterating the potential that bond yields rising above 3.25 would be a meaningful breakout. And it's, I think, also particularly instructive to look at the very long-term chart, because this is looking, or at least beginning, to look different. We've had plenty of occasions where the yield has popped above this long-term moving average, which is the equivalent of the 1,000-day, and every single one of them has failed. So the real confirmation that this trend has ended would be that the yield starts to find support in the region of the 2% level, and that moving average starts to turn upwards rather than trending down. But we're certainly at a very pivotal juncture for government bond yields. So the big challenge in front of central banks is just how populist they're prepared to be. If they act aggressively and raise rates high enough to kill off inflation, then they're risking having a significant asset price decline in both stocks and real estate. There will be, or inevitably be, bankruptcies, and they will have to avoid the temptation to go in and pour money into rescuing those bankrupt companies. And if they do all that, they'll kill off inflation. They will reset leverage, and they'll bolster their credentials as inflation fighters for probably a generation. But I think investors are probably right in thinking that it's very unlikely that they've got the stomach for that kind of hard medicine. And most particularly, consumers don't have the appetite for that kind of hard medicine. So if we start to see asset prices coming down in an aggressive manner, and I think it's particularly relevant to think about the fact that investors are very heavily levered, and we've seen consumers become progressively more heavily levered. And the buy now, pay later phenomenon has been one of the biggest enabling factors in outsized spending and demand. So we're going to have to see some of these types of companies experience some stress. And the availability of credit to consumers start to come back down. Because right now, it's if anyone with a credit, and there's approximately half of consumers have credit ratings in excess of about 700 in the USA, and they are having money showered on them by corporations. So the quantity of leverage that's in the system is really exceptionally high, and bond yields continue to march higher. So this is contributing to a corrective phase. Now, the big hope for additional liquidity is China, and they're certainly devaluing their currency. So having opened up again in here today, the renminbi was weaker by almost 5 basis points and cruising through the 1,000-day moving average. So I suspect that it is quite likely we're going to see the renminbi trading closer to 7 within the not so distant future. And then we had the H share index, which has been quite steady and had the big upward dynamic 4 sessions ago. And now the big question is it going to hold the low put in at the end of April? Because if it can do that, well, then we're back in a demand-dominated environment. But it's going to be able to do that only if there is additional liquidity infused into the market. Now, one thing that's clear is that the Chinese government is attempting to support the domestic technology sector. So semiconductors are a big part of that, and they've already developed leadership in battery technology manufacturing. So Contemporary Amperex Technology, CATL, announced that they're having pricing pressure right now. So they're going to have to start raising prices on their batteries because the cost of the commodities has risen. And they've also been losing money, or they've announced an impairment because of their short positions in nickel. So nickel has been exceptionally volatile, and it's starting to come back down now. But the bigger picture here is that battery companies are also experiencing inflation, and they're starting to raise prices. Well, if battery companies are raising prices, it means that battery-driven cars are going to have to go up in price, and that's going to cut into their ability to become cost competitive with internal combustion engines. So that's not good news for demand for nickel or copper, for that matter. And copper prices are pulling back through the 200-day moving average and challenging the sequence, and I think arguably have broken the sequence of higher reaction lows. So we're probably in for a deeper period of consolidation for copper prices. Now, ultimately, we're going to have to see, or we will see, greater demand emerging post this corrective phase, but perhaps from lower price levels. So I closed both my solar long in the ETF because I'm worried about how interest rate sensitive those companies are. I also closed my long in copper miners because I don't believe I bought it at a sufficiently attractive level to endure a medium-term correction. And if it does pull back more, well, then I'll be reinitiating the position and try to get a better price for it overall. But I'm not willing to sit with loss-making investments in this environment because I think that we're in for a deeper process of consolidation. And we're not going to see central banks really changing their minds until they have the opportunity to claim victory over inflation. And that is going to have to create a great deal of fear in the market. And I don't believe we're there yet. I'm still seeing lots of people talking about buying the dip. And buying the dip usually works best when people feel like it's the wrong decision. And that's generally an indication that enough people have sold out and sentiment has deteriorated enough that value has become present. Whereas I don't think we're there just yet. So I think it's more likely than not that we're going to have to see major indices coming back into the region of their respective 1,000-day moving averages. And of course, if China is willing to provide liquidity, well, then that would be beneficial for the Chinese economy. Now, they might also be encouraged to further devalue the yuan because of Japan's efforts to devalue the yen. Now, when we think about the Nikkei, it's been really very steady, but that's in yen terms. When we think about it in dollar terms, it's been trending lower in a really quite profound manner. And that's all down to the weakness of the yen as the dollar trends higher against it. So this is a significant devaluation of the currency, which is aimed squarely at cementing inflationary pressures within the economy and additionally enhancing the competitiveness of the domestic manufacturing and export sectors. So this is still a trend that's very much underway. When we think then about other markets, well, the Australian market is also susceptible to rising rates and a commodity contraction. So the index was in positive territory very mildly today, but it has clearly failed to sustain the breakout to new all-time highs and is now coming back down into the region of the lower side of the range. And the Australian dollar has been hovering around the 70-cent level, and it rallied impressively yesterday and then gave up the entire advance in here today. So it's going to have to hold that 70-cent level if the benefit of the doubt is to be given to the upside. And I think that when we think about how is all of this going to end, well, it would be very nice to think that the war in Ukraine is going to end amicably and that everyone would sit around and think, well, it wasn't such a good idea after all. And that is probably the most distant of possibilities. There's much more likely that it's going to be prolonged, that sanctions will be in place for a long period of time, and that new trade routes are going to have to be created. And that means greater demand for shipping too. Now, the Baltic Dry Index has been resurgent over the course of the last while, and it's establishing itself above the 2000 level. So, ships are being requisitioned, both because more stuff needs to get moved around a lot more. Because old supply chains aren't as reliable, and there's obviously supply chain problems. So that's creating additional demand for ships. And this sector has continued to hold out. But What we're also seeing now is that it's very defensive sectors. So partially cyclical sectors and then defensive sectors are doing better. So I was thinking about Campbell Soup, and it isn't the kind of share that people want all the time, but it is the kind of share people want when there's problems. So it tended to do well all the way throughout 2008. And then it rebounded really quite impressively immediately after the crash in 2008. So there are periods of time when these very boring defensive stocks tend to do well. But the dividend aristocrats have been holding out best relative to just about everything else. And it was almost unchanged in here today, down just a tad. So these defensive type sectors, they're generally the last to roll over, and they've still held up reasonably well. So we're not seeing a major decline overall for the defensive sectors just yet, but they are the last ones to go because in a bear market, they take them out one by one and shoot them. And we're definitely seeing that Apple is now starting to come under pressure. I think it was last Friday I did a review of point and figure charts, and Apple was the only one that was still reasonably consistent, but it is now closing below the 200-day moving average. So here as well, we're starting to see some risk getting taken off the table, and that of course has contributed to the strength of the dollar. So it's a big question whether central banks have the gumption to follow through on their promises. And this, of course, is where we're going to have some very deep conversations in the circles of power. Will they try to do what's necessary to kill inflation so that it doesn't become a problem for the next decade and more, which would necessitate a deep recession now, but a long cycle of expansion subsequently? Or will they be looking at election results and thinking that they need to do something now that's going to support growth? So there's the real possibility that what we're looking at is the potential for price controls. And price controls work in the short term. They create less inflation by ensuring that prices can't rise. And then when they're abandoned, inflation catches up and you end up with a much worse problem later. So capital controls and price controls are definitely politically motivated solutions and tend to be rather populist. And it's not at all as unlikely as we might like to think that those are being considered. So this is obviously a problematic issue. And if we do see price controls, it would be beneficial for asset prices and would probably elongate the cycle for a little while. But then we would have a much bigger inflationary problem and a deeper recession at some point in the future. But this is obviously going to be very political in nature, and it comes down to what will politicians do to ensure that they can win elections. And that's a very volatile question. I suspect that we're going to see at least one country, if not a few, resort to that kind of solution, probably before the end of the year or the end of next year. So I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.